Well, Marx wrote in the 18th Brumaire that men make circumstances, sorry, men make their own history, but not under circumstances of their own choosing. I think this is really fundamental in understanding the outcome of the Russian Revolution. The Civil War, in particular, is still a battleground for socialists today, with critics from the left and right that collapse the horrors of Stalin's Russia into the revolutionary period. But the outcome of the Civil War wasn't just a battle of political ideas. The Russian working class inherited a semi-feudal economy that was racked by war, industrial collapse, and foreign invasion. Production fell to 15% of pre-World War I levels during the Civil War. Despite this, workers and peasants heroically defeated the counter-revolution. But after 3 years of civil war, resources had been drained to the extreme. These factors meant the Bolsheviks weren't able to move towards building socialism. They had to turn all their efforts and resources to defending the revolution, to buy time until the revolutions they expected in the West would come to their rescue. Socialism could only be possible in such a backwards country as Russia, with material and political support from workers in the West. So I want to discuss some of the events of the Civil War and also the anarchist critiques of them. First, I think it's important to start any discussion of the Civil War, though, with what the Bolsheviks were fighting to defend. So, workers throughout the country's major industrial centers had voted to take power into their own hands. The Bolsheviks had led an insurrection and dispossessed the capitalists of political power, establishing a workers' government for the first time in history. And you have to see the potential that the revolution showed for workers around the entire world. So I'm going to quote Victor Serge extensively in this talk. He was a libertarian who went to Russia after the revolution and joined the Bolshevik Party. He said the revolution was the precondition for the subsequent evolution of humanity, for the great rebirth of humankind. And that revolution made waves beyond Russia itself. So Serge also wrote, it gave the revolutionary workers of Western Europe more than a boundless source of hope, but an example to follow, a body of doctrine, methods of struggle, and education and leaders. Now, why they held on? Well, while Russia had large industrial centers, they were cradled within a vast empire of over 100 million, and only the working class population was only 12 million, a tiny minority. So it was necessary for revolution to spread to undermine Russia's isolation. And the Bolsheviks were really clear on this. At the Second All-Russian Congress of Soviets on the 25th of October, like the day after taking power, Trotsky said, either the Russian Revolution will raise the whirlwind of struggle in the West, or the capitalists of all countries will crush our revolution. 4 months later, Lenin repeated, the absolute truth is that without a revolution in Germany, we shall perish. So the revolution was understood as the first in a chain. The Bolsheviks established the Communist Party, Communist International in March 1919 to help grow parties that could lead successful revolutions internationally. A global revolutionary wave following the Bolsheviks' example was totally possible. The years 1918 to 1919 saw the biggest revolutionary wave since 1848 in over 100 years. So the Bolsheviks weren't just waiting around for international revolution to spark itself. They were dedicated to encouraging revolutionary struggle abroad. Now I want to talk about what they were up against. So just as the revolution inspired hope in workers around the world, it inspired sheer terror in ruling classes. Less than a year after the Soviets had taken power in Russia, Russia was invaded by 14 different imperialist armies, including Australia, the UK, the US, and Japan. They claimed their intervention was about supporting a democratic alternative to the Bolsheviks and to the old Tsarist regime. But after workers had seized power, calls to return to parliamentary democracy were reactionary. The choices now were workers' power or counter-revolution. So while the moderate socialists, like the Mensheviks and the socialist revolutionaries, called for the convention of a constituent assembly, this was in opposition to the Soviets. And it quickly became a rallying point for the counter-revolution. The White Army, made up of counter-revolutionaries, monarchists, and former Tsarist generals, leapt onto any and all opposition to the Bolsheviks. And so these were the forces who were apparently fighting to defend democracy. They were collaborating extensively with the Allies and resorting to sheer terror to try to get their way. 4 days after the October insurrection, the Whites led a massacre against workers preparing for an insurrection in Moscow. They left dozens of civilians as well as soldiers who were promised an amnesty machine gunned. Walls of surrounding buildings were splattered with blood and bits of flesh, Serge described. Let it be remembered, the counter-revolutionary war had begun. The Whites interned 70,000 in concentration camps and murdered between 10 to 20,000 for such crimes as being part of a working class organization. In comparison, the Soviet Revolution in Finland had cost under 1,000 lives. After revolution, workers can't be so easily pacified. With the normal methods of repression of capitalism. So the counter-revolutionaries required more extreme methods. While the Bolsheviks implemented bans and severely punished practices like torture, anti-Semitism, and sexual violence, the Whites actively embraced the use of all of these practices. This is why Trotsky said, if the Red Army hadn't won the Civil War, fascism would have been a Russian word. The knowledge of what would befall them if they were captured changed the way that workers fought the war. So, Serge described the scenes in Petrograd when the Whites were on the cusp of capturing the city. All workers up to the age of 45 were called up, barricades built, barbed wire rolled out, and trenches dug by working class people. They took the offensive under Trotsky's command and they saved the city from destruction. Revolutionary political consciousness had changed workers. So a regiment of barely trained workers, men and women all bearing arms, headed to the front. And Serge described it like this. Men no longer go off to the front drunk, singing patriotic songs with panic in their hearts and madness in their brains. That was all right for the other war, World War I, for the insane war. This one, where they understand why they are fighting, is a dirty job, nothing more, which they accept without weakness, but with sadness. Now, because it's not just a question of being soldiers, but simply of being men. It was the courage of millions of workers and peasants who took up arms to defend the revolution that led to the seemingly impossible victory of the Red Army up against all odds. I also want to talk about the economic situation, because the invasion to Russia came when Russia was already facing a crippling economic blockade from neighboring countries. So the peace deal that Russia signed to exit World War I had conceded vast swathes of territory and precious resources to the Allies. The economy faced huge amounts of industrial sabotage from native capitalists attempting to withdraw their investments and disrupt production. And so industrial production quickly collapsed. In 1918, industrial output fell to 20% less than the levels of Britain in 1688. Workers were forced to return to their villages in search of food, as well as do things like scavenge in the woods, as the cities just ran absolutely empty. There were far more deaths from malnutrition, starvation, and disease than from the Civil War. So it was 7 million deaths from disease, famine, compared to 350,000 from direct combat. By 1921, 25 million people in Russia were facing famine. This led to the depopulation of the working class. So the size of the working class was reduced to 43% of what it was before the Civil War. And in Petrograd, which was the center of the revolution, it fell by 66%. And so this is the important context for all of the decisions that the Bolsheviks took that were far removed from socialist principles. The nationalization of industry and the introduction of one-man management replaced workers' control of production. Competition between factories had to be overridden to make a centrally coordinated response to the whites possible and to pull together scarce resources. Disciplinary measures were invoked to ward off theft or sabotage, and peace rates reintroduced to incentivize productivity. So the Bolsheviks were aware these were all compromises, but they were understood as necessary and temporary measures to stop production breaking down and guaranteeing their military defeat. Now, how did they win the war? Well, the war had to be won on multiple terrains: military, political, economic. So one important factor was the collapse of industry, and the blockade meant that supply of food from the peasantry was an absolute necessity. The Communist Party decided to requisition grain from the peasantry. And this was not just a military question, but also a political question, because a lot of the opposition to the Bolsheviks in this time wasn't on the basis of opposition to their politics, but because of sheer starvation and the appalling living conditions that people were facing. That being said, though, the vast majority of the population did not want to see the whites win. So if they weren't starving, they could often conjure up the will to hold out and keep going. The Bolsheviks relied on conscription to staff the Red Army. I think it's pretty amazing that they already had hundreds of thousands of people volunteer to staff the army, especially after one of the key demands of the revolution had been to end the carnage of World War I. But that wasn't enough. To fight a civil war against the whites, they needed an army of millions to help take on, you know, the most powerful imperialist armies in the world. So they introduced conscription, and the army quickly grew to 5 million. It was an unruly mass at first, which was shaped by Trotsky into a disciplined army with a working class core who were the most reliable elements. And they took real care to kind of inspire the troops in the army and give them a political education. So one tactic they took was to ensure the troops in each battalion had a decent number of Bolshevik Party members in them. So units with 6 to 8% of Bolshevik Party members were considered satisfactory, but those with 12 to 15% were shock troops, instilling their spirit in their non-party soldiers. 500,000 soldiers joined the party during the Civil War, and Trotsky said that he was fighting to make revolutionaries out of as many people as possible. Despite the paucity of resources, political departments in the army poured out newspapers, leaflets, pamphlets, and set up reading courses and libraries so that soldiers could take part in political debates. And I'll quote John Reed now, an American journalist who was touring around Russia during the revolution. He talked about the atmosphere in the party schools in the army, and this is what he said. An old professor gave an address where he glorified militarism. Suddenly, a student and a Communist Party member sprang to his feet. "Comrade students," he cried, "I object to the spirit of the last speech. True, it's necessary to learn the art of war, but only so that war may disappear forever. The Red Army is an army of peace. Our badge, our red star with our plow and our hammer, shows what is our purpose: construction, not destruction. We don't make professional soldiers. We don't want them in our Red Army. So soon as we've crushed the counter-revolution, so soon as we have international revolution that has forever put an end to imperialism, then we will throw away our guns and swords, frontiers will be abolished, and we'll forget the art of war. The impact of the revolutionary experience had transformed workers' consciousness. They weren't just fighting a military battle, but a battle over what kind of society they wanted to live in. Conscription, though, was a fact of life for all the armies engaged in the Civil War, including the anarchist partisan groups and the White Army. The social base of the Red Army, though, was resolute compared to the Whites. In the areas they controlled, the Whites returned land to the landowners and factories to the control of the bosses. They denied rights to workers and terrorized the local population. It was the class whose rule the Whites were seeking to defend that was lashing out in its decay. Despite more than £2.5 billion in funding from the UK alone, vastly superior weaponry and troops from 14 armies, the Whites lost. And they lost because they were less supported than the Bolsheviks by the majority labouring classes in Russia. This really hindered their ability to build a conscript army when they needed to. A memo to the British War Cabinet in 1919 even admitted that the offensives against the Whites would not have been possible without majority support by the population for the Bolsheviks. Of course, all of this, though, had a deadening effect on democracy, as is what often happens in times of war. Especially in Russia, though, because that was relying on working class democracy. And the working class fundamentally ceased to exist in this period. Many Soviets collapsed, or they were absorbed into regional or district Soviets, or even taken over by the central government to ward off sabotage by supporters of the old regime who were working within them. So Lenin acknowledged this, and he'd once asserted, "As a democratic government, we cannot evade the decisions of the popular masses, even if we don't agree with them." Now, he had to say, the Soviets acted as organs of government, not by the working people, but for them. As the shock troops for the Red Army, 50% of Communist Party members who fought in the Civil War were killed, wounded, or ill at its conclusion. Working class membership of the party eroded. So in 1917, workers had made up 60% of party membership. By 1921, that had fallen to 41%, and most of them were now working in the state or in the army rather than on the factory floor. Careerists began to join the party in increasing numbers, while the government presided over a hostile peasant majority. Hardships facing the population led to strikes, uprisings in the countryside, and the Kronstadt Rebellion in 1921. The immediate enemies of the revolution had been defeated, but intolerable living conditions remained, with no immediate answer to raising living standards or restoring democracy. Facing the collapse of the Soviets, the Bolsheviks began to substitute themselves for the democratic rule of the working class until that could be restored at the end of the war. And so the gap between the socialist ideal and reality became a chasm throughout the Civil War. At times, this led party leaders to make a virtue out of policies born out of necessity. So none of this means, like both conservatives and anarchists claim, that the rise of Stalinism was the result of Bolshevik politics. Political will could achieve miracles in the Civil War, but socialism can't be built from willpower alone. I think it's a testament to the party's organization, their discipline, their ability to inspire the masses to fight, that they held out as long as they did. And even as late as 1928, with Stalin's consolidation of power complete, He was forced to exterminate the last vestiges of the old Bolsheviks from this period. Now I want to address some of the anarchist critiques of the Bolsheviks. I think in general, they dismiss or downplay the extent to which the extenuating material circumstances led the Bolsheviks to make compromises. Instead, they attribute the conduct of the Civil War and the later counter-revolution to a failure of Bolshevik politics, to Marxism. One of the original sins of the Bolsheviks in their eyes was the seizure of power in the October Revolution. So, Maurice Brinton, an anarchist historian, states definitively that for anarchists, the fact that the state or political power were not immediately abolished is the ultimate proof and yardstick that nothing of fundamental significance really occurred, speaking about the October Revolution. He argues the alternative to centralized authoritarian power in the worker state was to give power to the grassroots factory committees. The contingencies of the Civil War simply didn't allow this. There's no way to fight a revolutionary war on a grassroots basis, and the factory committee militants understood this. They weren't calling for all power to the factory committees, but they demanded centralization and even nationalization of their factories to discipline the capitalists and to keep production going. The factory committees were also the first working class body to vote for all power to the Soviets and heavily represented Communist Party members. If the anarchists' abstract commitment to the proliferation of communes and mutual aid had been attempted, the whites would have crushed them and fascism would have reigned. A centralized party allowed the Bolsheviks to win over the working class and lead an insurrection, showing the way for revolutionaries around the world. The best anarchists and syndicalists updated their ideas to account for this new reality, so many of them joined the newly formed communist parties in their countries. Those in Russia who didn't want to be excluded from building the new society joined the Bolsheviks like Victor Serge did, or at the very least took up arms alongside them to defend the revolution. The anarchist arguments are simply abstract shibboleths, not grounded in reality, a reality which just couldn't be wished away. The world imperialists were determined to crush the revolution, and their schemers provided no answer to that. And remember, the Bolsheviks never claimed they were building socialism before Stalin won out and rewrote Marxism with his talk of socialism in one country. They were fighting for time, knowing that the fate of revolution relied on workers taking power in the West. And I just want to spend a bit of time talking about like the concept of coercion, because that's like one argument against the Bolsheviks that often comes up. I think it's true that the state is a tool of class rule and coercion. Throughout the Civil War, the Soviet state was being used to assert the interests and power of the working class over representatives of the old capitalist system. Supporters of the old regime needed to be compelled by an authoritarian force, the interests of the working class embodied in the state, to accept the revolution. And Friedrich Engels said, "A revolution is the most authoritarian thing there is. It's the act where one part of the population imposes its will on the other by means of bayonets, rifles, and cannons." The coercive power of the state, though, was not just used against explicit counter-revolutionaries, but also wavering sections of the population whose unrest undermined the fragile basis for Soviet rule. It was in the interests of the revolution always that any coercive means, like conscription, grain requisitioning, or restrictions on democracy, were used. And even throughout the ups and downs of the Civil War, support for the Bolsheviks remained high. The population had given their consent and their support for the revolution to the party to do what was necessary to defend it. And moreover, any successful working class action involves an element of coercion. Just think about a strike. It's coercive when striking workers call someone a scab that wants to cross a picket line. It's supportable though, because it's in the interests of the majority, and it's about saying the interest of an individual should not be allowed to undermine that of the collective. The individual rights of peasants to hoard their grain, or the rights of individuals to desert from the war effort to defend the revolution, couldn't be tolerated, as it undermined the collective struggle for socialism that would advance the rights of all, collective and individual. The suppression of political opponents is also listed as evidence of the Bolsheviks' authoritarianism and a prelude to the horrors of Stalinism. But counter-revolutionaries couldn't be given free rein to make their arguments in the middle of a bloody war. The Bolsheviks banned political parties who were calling for their overthrow and the publication of papers spreading these ideas. Terror is a part of every revolutionary war when the old rulers won't give up their power and privilege easily. So Lenin did not want to resort to the terror of the French Revolution. Initially, he said it was not necessary because they had strength on their side. But that changed as the White Army gained strength and the peasantry began to waver. Any opposition to the workers' government, whether counter-revolutionary explicitly or not, would have been used to support the whites. This was the case with the Kronstadt Uprising. It was a revolt of sailors with peasant backgrounds who were reacting to the grain requisitioning that was introduced by the Bolsheviks. The victory of the rebellion, though, would have meant opening up Petrograd, the center of the revolution, to ships full of whites ready to take the city. There's also evidence of collusion between some of the Kronstadt leaders and White Army generals. I think the role of socialists today isn't necessarily to apologize for every single thing the Bolsheviks did in the war. These were impossible decisions forged in the heart of a storm, and no one felt the weight of those decisions more than the leaders of the party, like Lenin and Trotsky, that took them. I think it's worth saying, though, the suppression of political opponents wasn't confined to the Bolsheviks, but is a reality for anyone wanting to win a war. So Nestor Makhno and his peasant army engaged in just as authoritarian measures as the Bolsheviks, but are held up as a supposedly libertarian alternative to them. Makhno spurned the working class and wanted to introduce anarchism through armed conquest. To do this, he built a centralized peasant army with an officer corps and established a security apparatus just as brutal as the Bolsheviks' Cheka. He also tortured and killed prisoners from both the Red and White Army, banned rival political parties, and assassinated their members. And his hostility to workers' power meant that he, at times, actively undermined the Bolsheviks' fight against the whites. The Bolsheviks, though, had never planned to form a one-party state. State and Revolution by Lenin mentions the party only three times in the whole book, and it was widely understood that after the revolution, that multiple parties would exist within the Soviets and workers' state. The choice, though, was stark. Hold on until revolutions in the West brought relief, or go down to defeat in fascistic terror. Okay, so now I'll start to sum up. The Civil War came to an end after 3 long years in 1921. It was followed by the introduction of the new economic policy, which was a concession to the peasants to reintroduce a limited market system. It was a sign of intense commitment to the revolution, the heroism and sacrifice of millions. They were able to triumph against the most advanced militaries in the world. But it was also more than just bravery. The Communist Party had played an indispensable role in leading the working class to victory. Serge described the party as the only organization capable of inspiring, channeling, and directing their energies, which have just triumphed. The party is, in this sense, the nervous system of the class. The tragedy of the Russian Revolution, though, was that counter-revolution didn't come from without, but from within. From the lack of material abundance and the political isolation when the European Revolutionary Wave failed to come to its aid. Had there been aid from abroad, working class democracy could have been restored at the conclusion of the Civil War. While some of the worst excesses imposed during the war were curbed, especially at Lenin's insistence, the scarcity of Russian society meant that the working class couldn't resume their role as being the basis for Soviet democracy. They couldn't staff the Soviets and other government institutions when they barely existed as a class. So those hostile to the Russian Revolution link the emergency measures taken during the war to Stalin's counter-revolution, his dictatorship, and his gulags. But really, I think people that oppose the Russian Revolution oppose the audacity of Russian workers wanting to take power in their own right, and the Bolsheviks for being the leading political force to carry them to victory. Serge asked, "What greater injustice can be imagined towards the Russian Revolution than to judge it in light of Stalinism alone?" The fact is, Stalin was not the inheritor of Bolshevism, but the result of the failures of the Socialist and Labour Party's refusal to lead a fight for workers' power in the West. I think socialists today should be proud to be on the side that dared to take power for our class, that fought with such bravery and courage for the vision of a socialist world. And the outcome of the Civil War, for me, rather than discrediting Marxist politics, confirms two really essential concepts. One, socialism cannot exist in one country, it must be an international struggle. And two, that we need mass socialist organizations around the world to fight for it.